TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Vandana Shiva's Celebration of Gandhi's Home Rule. A talk in support of the Charter Project of Mendocino County. Dr. Vandana Shiva is a philosopher, environmental activist, and eco-feminist. She's the co-founder and director of the Navdanya Research Foundation and the author of many books, including Soil, Not Oil, Environmental Justice in an Age of Climate Crisis, and Stolen Harvest, The Hijacking of the Global Food Supply. It was an extraordinary feat to hear her speak in the standing room only Little Lake Valley Grange, in a very small former logging town in Northern California. Willits maintains one of the earliest successful economic localization projects. Vandana Shiva had been invited by the Charter Project of Mendocino. Their goal is to make the county of Mendocino the 15th of California counties that gained a degree of self-governance and home rule by becoming a charter county. If the voters approve the project, Mendocino would be joining counties such as San Francisco, Los Angeles, Sacramento, Fresno, and San Mateo, and, in the case of Mendocino, become empowered to form a community-controlled public bank, patterned after the Bank of North Dakota. Here is Vandana Shiva.
I'm so happy to be able to join you in this process of launching your campaign for being a charter county. And I noticed in the flyer that it said home rule. A lot of people forget that home rule was the term used everywhere in the world to resist the empire. And in those days, the empire was a British empire. It grew out of a company empire. The first corporation was East India Company, 1600. It was incorporated so that there could be privatization of profits and socialization of costs. And that carries on till today. The reason your initiative for a charter is so important is because the corporations are constantly writing the charters for their rule, their interests, their monopolies. And it is really time for people to remember that freedom and democracy is defended when people start to write charters. It was in 1906 that Gandhi, who of course was so vital to India's independence movement, but before that, actually, he had spent 30 years in Africa, South Africa. And he was on the ship from England to South Africa. And he wrote a little book on freedom. Its subtitle was Home Rule. When people ask me what's a book that has inspired me more, it's really tiny. And it's question and answers. That's all it is. And it's questions about some very, very basic things. And he's, of course, thinking ahead and saying, when India will be free, will she maintain the structures and systems of colonization? And he's saying, no, she can't be free if the structures of enslavement continue. So to be truly free, you must have home rule. But he defined home rule not just as brown skins replacing the British. He defined it as Swaraj. Swa means self. Raj means rule, governance. For him, self-rule was every person governing themselves. Now, you can't govern yourself unless the values that allow you to live in alignment with the planet, the earth, social justice, human rights, democracy, are within you. Because so much of what has colonized us comes from the idea of external control. GMOs are based on the idea of external manipulation. Industrial farming is based on the idea of external inputs, of chemical fertilizers, synthetic pesticides, Roundup. And the assumption is the poor plant doesn't know what to do with itself. And the soil is an empty container, waiting for chemical fertilizers to be doused on it. You know, when I did my study on agriculture in Punjab and what had gone wrong in 1984 when we had the rise of extremism, it was the land where industrial chemical agriculture was first applied in the third world. It was called the Green Revolution. Not green, not revolutionary. Because how can transporting war tools and technologies into the way we produce our food be revolutionary? Nothing is more regressive than bringing war to our farms and our kitchens. So I read every book that was taught for industrial chemical farming. Plants were factories, and they ran on the fuel of chemical fertilizers. Soil was an empty container into which we could pour chemical fertilizers. No, plants are not factories. They are self-organized complexity in life. And that's where self-rule, home rule, local democracy as self-governance, as political freedom, and the ability of life to organize itself as ecological freedom have the same principles. And of course, this works all the way from the tiniest of cells and the tiniest of microbes to the individual species and the organism to an ecosystem to the entire planet, which scientists now call Gaia, inspired by the Greek goddess Gaia, because there's no word in modern science which could communicate the self-organizing Earth, a planet which is constantly maintaining its temperature, creating conditions for life to emerge and be maintained. And that's what we are disrupting, except that because the planet is self-organized, she'll find another level. The Earth survived ice ages. She'll survive warming. It's just that we won't belong then. Yeah. And of course, there is a hubris. There's a huge, huge arrogance, which is reflected in the idea of genetic engineering. And it's reflected in the idea of geoengineering. Now engineer the planet. We messed it up. Rather than stopping the pollution, you create artificial volcanoes. President Bush had a favorite experiment, which didn't go through, but the experiment was to put reflectors in the sky to send back the sunlight as if the sun was the problem. Rather than realize the sun is a blessing. And the pollution is the problem. You know, I work on climate change, but I don't talk only about climate change because climate change is a residual impact of irresponsible human action. You talk about the irresponsible human action rather than create an isolated phenomena out of the impact. Because if you isolate it, and then you're going to be tinkering with it, you're going to do geoengineering, because it's a phenomena that exists outside of human action. And the reason I've made this extra effort to join you is because here in your local community, you're taking every step to care for this beautiful planet, beginning with the local. We've had globalization and free trade. In fact, the first free trade agreement is not the World Trade Organization. The first free trade agreement is what was written as an agreement, literally with a bribe, by the East India Company and a falling Mughal Empire. I think it was a 500 rupee bribe, which in today's currency would be $10. They bribed a clerk and got a signature. And the treaty is called the Free Trade Treaty between the Right Honorable East India Company and Farrukh Sheer. And it did exactly what current free trade treaties do: tax the local, make the global tax free, privilege at every point the global, so that the local is punished. So we've got this big globalized economy called free trade, and there's nothing free about it except for corporations. And a lot of my friends and colleagues say, oh, we can't use the word free because it's associated with free trade. I said, just because they've tried to hijack our most precious word, freedom, we have to reclaim it. And that's what you're doing with your charter initiative. So, of course, for the giant corporations, it makes very, very good sense to go to a big government and get a global law passed or a national law passed. Because they're not going to go to 5,000 counties and come on their knees and beg you to accept their rule. Because you tell them, no, sorry, we know how to live better. So these laws that allow the illusion that seed is an invention of the chemical poison companies is therefore their property, and they can take a patent on it and collect royalties on it. That law is called the Intellectual Property Rights Law of the World Trade Organization. It has a T before it now because my government, Indian government, with whom I've worked very closely in those days, we said, but intellectual property rights, first of all, things like life are not intellectual property. Life doesn't pop out of anyone's head. Because the definition of intellectual property is property in a product of the mind. A seed does not pop out of Monsanto's head, which doesn't have a head anyway. Yeah, Monsanto is a piece of legal paper. We get, you know, corporate charters gave them permission to exist. Now they want to be persons. Now they're claiming they're persons. But they don't have heads. They don't have bodies. And it's this separation between the fact that there are people who make huge money by being part of Monsanto, including the shareholders, and yet the corporation is different from them. And this is where the East India Company, as a limited liability corporation, you know, it begins this track. Take the profits, shed the responsibility. And it's so clear in the way the GMO issue was brought and imposed on the world. And that's why in every place where people care for freedom, they're saying, we don't want GMOs. Somewhere they do it by just growing the alternative stronger. Somewhere they do it like you, by getting a GMO-free decision passed at the county level. So the law on intellectual property, literally a Monsanto representative said, we did something unprecedented. We wrote a law, took it to our government, imposed it on the world. That's what they say about intellectual property in seed. That they wrote the law. They say that we were the patient, the diagnostician, and the physician all in one. As a patient, their sickness was that people save seeds. That's why they were sick. Their solution was it should now be made illegal. Seed saving should be made illegal. And I was at a meeting in 1987 where the biotech industry was working out its strategic plans, and they really had thought by year 2000 all seed would be genetically modified. Most seed isn't. And by the time our freedom movements have completed their task, we will have rendered genetic engineering where it belongs, in the garbage of history. Because the first false claim is, we've invented the seed. The second false claim is, we have a right to a monopoly on the seed because we are bringing better seeds. Why do people fight against GMOs if they were better seeds? Everyone knows that all that genetic engineering has achieved in all of these years is putting two toxic traits into our food. A BT toxin, which is toxin, the name tells you, and herbicide resistance, which is a toxin, which also allows more spraying of another toxin, the Roundup and the glyphosate. And antibiotic resistance markers and viral promoters. It is such a clumsy technology. Interestingly, you know, there's a particular scientist called Dr. Folter, and you might have seen in the New York Times yesterday, there was an article and emails have been released because of freedom of information action. And this scientist used to constantly say, I've never taken money from Monsanto. I don't work with Monsanto, I work independently. It turns out Monsanto was paying him. And not only was Monsanto paying him, Monsanto's PR firm, the public relations firm called Ketchum, was writing his articles. And one of these articles that was being written was, it's a graph, saying genetic engineering is exact because it works with three genes. Well, what are the three genes? The gene you shoot, which is the toxic gene, and you shoot it with a gene gun, an antibiotic resistance marker, viral promoter. Why do you need antibiotics resistance markers? Because you don't know if your shooting is working. So, in order to identify the cells that absorb the gene from the cells that didn't, you put an antibiotic resistance marker, then pour an antibiotic on the petri dish, and the cells in which the new gene didn't get introduced die. So then you multiply the cells in which the toxic gene got added. Why do you need viral promoters? Because all life forms are intelligent, down to the cellular level. And they reject that which is not part of their organizing. So just like when there are organ transplants, there's a tendency to reject the organ and lots of medicines have to be given. When a gene is introduced, there's a tendency to silence it. And so the viral promoter pumps it up as an for expression. Every step is the unreliability of the technology. And yet Folter says, this is accurate because we work with three genes. And normal breeding works with all the genes. Well, that's the whole point. Just like in real democracy, everyone's voice counts. In the democracy of life as self-organization, all the genes and all the cells count. They're doing something. They're active. But the worldview on which GMOs are based is the idea that life is a machine. It's dead matter. It's like a Lego set. You can move things around. But life is intelligent self-organization and self-regulation. And when you rupture through forcing genes that don't belong, the regulatory processes start to get disrupted. There's a recent study done by someone I know from MIT. He started to hear from scientists that GMOs were accumulating formaldehyde. I only have a memory of formaldehyde as the liquid in which you keep lab specimens, you know? Turns out formaldehyde is produced in plants, but it's immediately reabsorbed in a regulatory process. So it doesn't accumulate. In GMOs, it's accumulating. And more than 1,000 studies have shown it. more than 1,000 studies. So there's proof that the regulatory processes within an organism are being disrupted. It also shows that the idea on which the entire non-regulation of the United States is based, that idea is called substantial equivalence, is a false idea. Because if a plant regulates the formaldehyde and a GMO is not able to regulate the formaldehyde, the two things are different. But in any case, the same companies and the same governments treat a GMO as a new invention, different from anything in nature, different from anything done by farmers, when they claim intellectual property. It never existed in nature before our invention. And then when people say, okay, tell us about its safety, I say, just like nature. I have called this ontological schizophrenia. Because how can the same thing be novel and not novel? How can the same thing be natural and not natural? And this again is part of that split. When it comes to privatizing profits, then we'll claim it's not natural. And when it comes to shedding responsibility, you say, oh, farmers have always done it, nature's always done it, we are doing nothing new. Now I'll share with you briefly how you got non-regulation in this country on GMOs and why it took counties like your county to say no. There is an international treaty called the Convention on Biological Diversity. Just like there's a climate treaty to find solutions to climate change, there is a biodiversity treaty to stop the erosion of species diversity. And both these treaties were signed at the Earth Summit in 1992 in Rio de Janeiro. My government had asked me to advise it on the Biodiversity Convention because I was already saving seeds from 87 onwards. I was already working on biodiversity, biotechnology, so they asked me to help, and I did. And we managed to get into that treaty an article called 19.3, in which we said all impacts of genetically engineered organisms, called GMOs, which is not very accurate, that all GMOs must be assessed for their impact on the environment. And the new language we created in that treaty was biosafety. There's all kinds of safety, including in food. But biosafety is the particular safety issues arising from genetically engineered crops and food. This is a law. It then became a protocol. And I was appointed by the UN to be part of the expert group to make it. There's an international Cartagena Protocol requiring governments to look at biosafety. It's that protocol that has allowed governments to be GMO-free across the world. Because Senior President Bush stomped out. I was there in Rio. He stomped out and said, I'm not going to allow my $50 billion biotech industry to be destroyed because it only existed as long as you can have monopoly rights through patents and no safety assessment. You implement biosafety and the recognition that seed is not a machine, but self-organized evolution. Those two basic scientific issues and democratic issues, you put them together, you don't get a GMO. No one will adopt a GMO. No government will adopt a GMO. So President Bush walked out, said, I'm not going to sign this treaty. US hasn't signed this treaty yet. Came back and told his vice president, and I'll never forget this, this vice president's name was Dan Quayle. And Dan Quayle went all over the world, the news about him not being able to spell potato. You remember? But Dan Quayle, who could not spell potato, could spell substantial equivalence, much more complicated word. There's a very, very good film made by a French filmmaker whose title is The World According to Monsanto. Her name is Marie-Monique Robin. She's also written a book that goes with it. It's that fat. And the book is entirely based on public domain data. One of the scenes in that film is President Bush visiting Monsanto headquarters. This is before Rio, saying, "Tell me what you want to do, and that'll be law." So, even before WTO, even before 95, Monsanto was writing US laws. Then it started to write global laws using the US government, and it is continuing on that. When corporations write laws, democracies stop to exist. And it's only when we start to reclaim democracy by writing our own laws, which is what you're doing with your charter, that democracy gets born again. And today, it has become so important because the consequences of corporate rule are nothing less than species extinction, extinction of our species, nothing less.
That was the first part of an hour-long talk by the Indian ecologist, philosopher and seed saver Vandana Shiva. She co-founded and leads Navdanya, which promotes seed saving and organic farming and has more than 70,000 farmer members. The word Navdanya means nine seeds and also the gift. This gift or dana of seed is the ultimate gift. It is a gift of life, of heritage, and continuity. Come back when TUC Radio returns to hear the second half of Vandana Shiva's talk. She calls for civil disobedience to laws that have recently been passed in many countries and states, including California. These laws make the age-old custom of saving and exchanging seeds illegal. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Open the newest programs page and scroll down. This program was produced off the grid with solar power. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations and free as podcast online. This is an unfunded program that depends entirely on donations by listeners. You can contact TUC Radio online at tucradio.org. The email is tuc@tucradio.org. Time of useful consciousness is an aeronautical term. It's the time between the beginning of oxygen deficiency and the loss of consciousness. Time for useful projects to rescue the planet and the plane. My name is Maria Glodden. Thank you for listening.